Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Ghostbusters and the secret life of pets. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
And it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. I said on DVD-E. That's a new format that clearly I'm trying to invent here.
It's electronic DVDs.
E-DVDs.
Yes.
It's DVD-Es.
Stuff you watch.
It's probably a format that I would have bought having, like, bet on the wrong horse, Betamax and HD DVD and...
Yeah, what was that other one?
Yeah, there was Blu-ray and HDVD.
HD DVD.
Laserdisc,
that was the one.
All of these formats of the future. And it's going away, fortunately, thank God.
Yeah, that we don't have to have all of these bulky units now.
Or we don't have to keep buying these movies. Although, have you heard about these high-def Blu-rays they're coming out with? HDR? Like, expanded that, okay, this, it's going to get a bit too geeky for our regular audience, but high dynamic range is when you have, like, a much wider colour gamut, so the light to dark range and the colour spectrum. Apparently looks great. I've never seen an HDR TV show, but it's apparently much closer to real life than even our current TVs with our 4Ks and anything.
But wouldn't it have to be captured in that?
Yeah. Oh, and so most films are, like, these cameras they use in Hollywood capture all sorts of data that they have to throw out to compress it down to Blu-ray or even 4K. But anyway, it's, and film obviously captured a lot more than Blu-ray and TV and 4K can even show. So anyway, really geeky.
Notice but. Our eyes glazing over now.
No, that's good to know.
No, there's all these cool technologies, but...
The times, they are a-changing.
Yes.
But HD Blu-ray, no, HDR Blu-ray is coming this year.
And it's coming.
Okay, let me get out of my rocking chair with my cane, with my cane, and sit down.
All right. So, before we do our reviews of the week, Ghostbusters and Secret Life of Pets, two movies that I'm really excited to talk about. We're going to do our usual I can't find anything on Netflix segment, which is to let you know what's in our queue, what's coming out on Netflix, things that you may not have missed. It's done primarily to address the question that we hear from people all the time. There's so much choice on Netflix, I don't know where to start. So, guys, what are your picks on Netflix this week?
So I found one that's a very dear movie to me that I kind of watched in my informative years. It is the movie A Room with a View, yes. Which is, it's just this divine movie. It's set in one of my favorite cities, which is Florence. It's, it sounds boring, an Edwardian coming of age movie, but it's not about the time it's set in. It's just about how wonderfully this character is written. It's got lovely names like Lucy Honeychurch and her chaperone Charlotte Bartlett. It stars the wonderful Dame Maggie Smith and Helena Bonham Carter, amongst many lovely British actors. Just a delightful film that really was such... It made such an impression on me as a young, older teen, I would say.
It might have been one of Helena Bonham Carter's very first movies.
I think it was.
Not, it certainly was the one which got her noticed.
Yeah.
It's of a time of those merchant ivory, high quality production with good, it's that perfect trifecta, good acting, good dialogue, good direction.
Set in a beautiful place with amazing cinematography, so.
Yeah.
And my love affair with Florence began. That's what you can blame, Joe.
Is that right?
That's probably it.
It's quite fun.
Yes. Yazdi, what's yours?
My pick is a movie that I've been kind of championing for a long time, ever since I saw it premiere at the Toronto Film Festival 3 years ago. It's probably one of my favorite, highest regarded Indian movies of contemporary times. It's a movie called Margarita with a Straw.
Oh, yeah. I remember you speaking about this.
And it's finally on Netflix. And... it's quite something else, especially if you're familiar with Indian cinema. It just throws, it's essentially raising a middle finger to all the constraints and mores of Indian cinema. Thou shalt not do that and thou cannot show that and so forth. And it's really about a topic which is almost never explored in cinema at all of any kind. And I think the last movie to deal with it in any major way was the movie The Sessions. Do you remember with Helen Hunt and what's his name?
Another one you're thinking of.
Yeah, John Hawkes.
Yes, John Hawkes.
John Hawkes.
Who we thought was robbed of an Oscar.
Of an Oscar nomination. Yeah. But really, it's about the sexuality of the mentally challenged. And this particular movie is about a girl who has cerebral palsy. And she has grown up under very watchful eyes of her parents, who obviously are watching out for her because the world is a cruel place. And she gets an opportunity to come to New York City, and she comes to New York City, and literally you can see her bloom and grow. And it's about her struggles as a person with disability in a world which doesn't always treat, you know, people with disability fairly. And it's so open about her needs and her wants and where she goes and what she finds out and her culture, and it's quite something. It's very heartfelt, and the lead actress, Kalki Kochlin, I knew her from before from watching her movies in India, but I remember when, after the movie was over at Toronto, when she walked out on the stage, there was a gasp from the audience because everybody was absolutely convinced that the lead part had been played by somebody who had cerebral palsy, and they could not believe that this was not somebody.
Wow.
And she's quite remarkable at it. So, Margarita with the Straw.
Joe.
Check it out.
My movie pick is one that I stole from both of you because it just came out on Netflix, and I think
damn you, Joe,
probably the top of
you
both
totally
of your lists.
Stole this one from us.
So it's a movie called Mustang. This is a one that we actually reviewed relatively recently on Movie Waller. So it was towards the end of last year, or maybe even early this year.
It was early this year.
It was a foreign language nominated movie, and it comes from the country of Turkey, which is going through some
topical
political crises right now. But it's really nothing to do with that. It's about five spirited teenage sisters that live in Turkey with their male classmates. It's very much a coming-of-age type movie. It's one that we all were blown away with. It's running an impossibly high 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, this is a movie that is universally loved. The three of us were completely aligned. I think it was nines all round, perhaps, which is not often, especially with the Yazdi and his stingy scoring and his very, very rare nines. But I think we all loved that.
I think this is one of my favorite movies of, you know, original release from 2015. This is phenomenal. This is so well done. It's hard to do coming of age movies that I think appeal universally and get really under your skin, and this one goes under your skin and into your bloodstream.
And it's just, it's such powerful filmmaking, the perspective of these young girls, the fire within them, just so many memorable moments in this story, and it really doesn't misstep at all. So, you know, it's amazing that this movie came so quickly to Netflix, if anything.
I'm kind of glad, because hopefully people will get an opportunity to watch it. I think it was even Oscar nominated.
It was in very close contention for winning Best Foreign Film last year.
Yeah.
And if, you know, people listen to us at all, I would say please just take our word for it. Just watch Mustang. I will send you a $15 Starbucks gift card if you do not like it. I'm going to stand behind that. It's such an incredible film. And again, it kind of does not sidestep some very, very sensitive issues. It talks about the power of teen sexuality again, and it's handled so beautifully, and save for a slight misstep. We talked about this towards the end.
Oh, no, that's right.
It's near perfect. And it's very topical about what's going on right now anywhere in the world. We talked about this. This movie could be set in India. It could be set in Africa. It's something else. You have to watch this movie.
And amazing acting by these young kids.
Yeah. You have to watch it.
Great choice, Joe, that you stole from Yazdi and I.
Just beat you to it. All right. To recap, we have A Room with a View, Margarita with a Straw, and Mustang. Go check them out. All right. Two movies this week. Should we start with Ghostbusters?
Sure.
Okay.
So in 1984, it's hard to believe, almost 22 years ago, the original Ghostbusters came out. It was directed by Ivan Reitman, and it starred Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, and who am I missing?
Bill Murray?
No.
Dan Aykroyd?
Yes.
And, yeah, Harold Ramis. Yes. That's the three of them.
And Harold Ramis was... Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd also wrote the script for it. And it was kind of a big commercial hit at that time. Not as critically beloved as one might be led to believe, but I remember it was a big deal.
It was a phenomenon.
It was a phenomenon around the world.
It really was very much of its time.
Yeah. And I remember that logo of the ghost with the no-go sign was a big deal. I mean, everybody had those T-shirts. I had that T-shirt as well. But anyway, yeah, we are 22 years later, and director Paul Feig, he of Bridesmaids and Heat and most recently Spy last year, took on a reboot / remake of the movie, and the twist was, or the gimmick was, that this time it was an all-female-led Ghostbusters. And so the four female actors chosen to play the role of the Ghostbusters were Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. And this time the writers are Paul Feig and Katie Dippold. And of course they give credit to the original writers, Ivan Reitman, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis, because they created the original characters. There's nothing really to say by way of the plot. These are Ghostbusters. They are in New York City. They go after ghosts. And it's a comedy / horror / supernatural thriller. The movie's been getting a lot of press, in the 6 months leading up to its release, because I think on the IMDb it had the most number of negative scores of any movie before it was even released.
The YouTube trailer, I think, also had the biggest number of thumbs down of any movie trailer in history.
Really?
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought that it had to do with sexism, and that essentially people were upset that, you know, that they were using a gimmick of all female, lead actors playing the role. And, you know, so the movie's...
Well, I was one of them. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. So the movie's, you know, been under a lot of scrutiny. And so here we are, finally having seen it. What do you guys think of Ghostbusters? Does it stand up on its own merits?
So I was actually one of the naysayers, in part because I thought this movie was not, you know, we've got this remake bug right now. There are so many films that are just being, you know, reinvented.
Utilitis or sequelitis.
Absolutely. And I think it didn't feel like we needed another Ghostbusters. I watched the trailers and this movie looked horrible. The gags didn't seem to work very well in the trailer, and it wasn't coming from a sexist perspective, but I did think it was, just a way of getting press to cast these three females as the leads, four females rather, as the leads. But actually, the movie trumped everything. I think sometimes expectations can work against a movie, sometimes for. In this case, low expectations going in left me with a delighted sense of the movie. And ultimately, I felt that the jokes really worked. This movie, it was genuinely funny. And, it really delivered in a way that I think was respectful to the original. There were lots of little callbacks, but at the same time brought in a kind of a fresh perspective. So I think this movie really worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, is there anyone out there who hasn't seen at least one of the original Ghostbusters by now? I mean, I imagine that, you know, this has such a high bar that it's competing against, where not only was this a phenomenon, like you said, yes, the intro, but it's beloved. And I'm one of those who found it beloved. And it's one of those movies, any one of them. And I know the third one was, you know, pooped on, but I enjoyed them. That whenever I see it on, from wherever it's on, I can just keep it on and watch to the end. So I was a bit worried. I was a bit worried about what we were going to get. I think I'm a bit fatigued by all these reboots. Some are hit, some are miss. I don't particularly love Paul Feig. He's a bit hit or miss for me. I agree with you, Joe. I think this was a great time at the movies. I literally had goosebumps as the credits ran at the beginning. There are so many winks and nods to the original, but it's, I think, got a suitably original enough story that keeps you engaged. My criticism is, though, it feels like a little bit of an infomercial for the original movie at times.
So before I give my opinion, the original Ghostbusters did have a fourth Ghostbuster. It was Ernie Hudson, so I'm sorry for not bringing that up.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he was, of course, there. So I think this movie, for me, suffered from the curse of expectations. You had very low expectations for this. I had very high expectations because every time Paul Feig has worked with Melissa McCarthy and even with Kristen Wiig, you know, he's just knocked it out of the park. And I love all those movies, Bridesmaids, Spy, not as much The Heat, but really like those movies. So I had very high expectations. From that perspective, I think it's the least of Paul Feig's movies. I think all three of those movies, I personally think, are better. But having said that, I think you cannot bring, you know, those people together and not have it be at least, you know, at least fundamentally funny. And this is a very good script. I mean, I remember right from the very first sentence that gets said, you know, the original movie famously opened in the library. If you remember, this one opens in a house, old kind of museum. And the very first scene, the very first sentence that comes out of the tour guide's mouth is hilarious. And then the next sentence. So right off the bat, this is written so well. And then when you bring, you know, this talent together, you cannot help, you know, not laugh at it. So I really had a very good time with those actors. And I think Manuela Dargis in the New York Times has said, you know, it's women, they're funny, get over it. And that's, I fully agree with it. It's like, you know, why do we even have to make this men, female, you know, men versus women thing? You know, some actors are funny and some are not. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. And it's frankly more than offensive to say that only men can be funny and women cannot. But
is that really the press? Because I haven't read a ton of press about this. I mean, I know that the people were grumbling about the fact that, oh, you know, they had to create some kind of gimmick to generate interest. And this movie went through a lot of script and rewrites and directors and even potential cast members. So it took a while for them to even get this together to make. But are people really grumbling about the fact that there were three female leads and not four female leads? And they were having trouble today remembering all Ghostbusters. Really? That's horrible.
That was the thing. I remember when Bridesmaids came out, that was the big narrative that, oh, women are funny. It's ridiculous.
I don't think it's a case of like, it's all women. Is it funny? I don't think there was going to ever be any question about it being funny. I think the issue comes down to, I think, Joe, you said it, which is, Do we really need a reboot of this movie?
We don't.
And so if you do decide to reboot it, you almost have to make it so different, but yet you have to kind of keep the themes the same because, you know, it's not going to be like, you know, Assault on Precinct 13 meets Ghostbusters, the original with women in it. So you've got to kind of have some original material in it, but then you've got to make it suitably different. I guess the issue I had as I was watching it was, I loved it, and like I said, I had goosebumps because it was such a homage to the old yes, original version. Mm-hmm. But I kept thinking, if I was a new audience member who hadn't watched this, if I'm a teenager coming to this movie for the first time, to the source material, and I haven't somehow watched the original because I've had my head in the sand or in my phone, then what am I going to think about it? And I couldn't quite figure out if there's enough here in terms of a story.
I think
or
there is
action. Or depth.
So, I mean, I'll take the counter to that because I think there's definitely enough meat to the movie to make it very satisfying. And I saw a short interview with Paul Feig. It was, you know, one of these 2-minute kind of, you know, Hollywood Reporter type clips. But he essentially said that his reason for getting involved in the project was that, you know, not that the world needed a new Ghostbusters, but that he had a huge fondness for the original, and he saw it as an opportunity to reintroduce this concept to a whole new audience in a different way. So, I mean, I think the movie achieves that very much. I don't know that it relies too heavily on knowledge of the previous movies, although if you, as many of us, do remember the movie, then those little callbacks just kind of, you know, add little tingles to the jokes. They're lovely. They're done in a way that's respectful. I think the movie also speaks directly to its critics. There's a movie, there's a section in the movie where a YouTube video is posted and they make direct reference to all of the shtick that the movie has received in the press. So I, you know, that was a genuine kind of bold, you know, middle finger to everyone who thought that this movie was going to fail.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I know what you mean, Rashmi. I think almost all of the members from the original, or of the main actors from the original Ghostbusters movie, show up with, you know, for cameos in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, even, one even is dead, and the other one was Rick Moranis. I mean, that's really the only people.
Right. But, you know, I won't give spoilers in terms of who shows up, but they all show up. And I think if you haven't seen the original one, maybe that won't resonate for you. Like if you see Annie Potts, I don't know if anybody even knows who Annie Potts is right now, but it's so fun to see her in the movie. So I think a little bit will be lost there, but I think it'll work for people who have already seen the original one. It'll work as a very good homage.
Mm-hmm.
Although I personally expected a little bit more. And I can get to that in a second. And I think for those who haven't seen the original Ghostbusters, I mean, there's enough novelty. There's something very retro about it. You know, the ghosts seem like from the 80s because it's clearly paying homage to those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't seem particularly, they don't seem particularly sophisticated. And you know, that's how the original movie, and intentionally so. I mean, this is not trying to be a horror movie.
Right, because the CGI we have these days and the horror movies and the technicalities that we can exhibit are amazing. So.
Yeah, they're spooky rather than frightening.
Correct.
And it's all in that kind of sense of spooky fun, kind of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, very much Scooby-Doo, yeah. I personally expected a little bit more. I wanted it to kind of blow me out of the water, and it did not. But I completely acknowledge the high level of difficulty here.
Yeah.
I'm just glad this movie didn't suck. It did not suck at all.
I want to call out to the performances, Kate McKinnon and Chris Hemsworth, both of whom I thought were huge high points. Kate McKinnon was, I don't know her. From SNL.
She does Hillary Clinton, always.
You know, it's funny. Somehow I've missed her screen presence, and this is the first time I can really see her, think of her in a major role. I'm not a huge SNL fan, so that's probably why I don't know her. But did she nail every single line that she was given or not? I mean, for me, she was brilliant.
So how strange. That was the one performance I had the most trouble with.
Really?
Yeah. Why? So I don't know why. It's here are my notes. I felt like it was overplayed. I felt like each of those characters, the four, had been mapped back to the original four, clearly. And for some reason, Igor was... I think she played that Igor character. She was clearly the one that was mapped. And it was overplayed. It was so overplayed for me.
I thought her timing was spot on.
I think she was funny, but I felt like I wish it had just been down a notch.
But I think that's her thing. She plays this giddy, I don't care about the world, kind of super confident person. So I see what you mean, how it might seem a little larger than life, but I think...
Interesting, because I think she was very well restrained.
But Chris Hemsworth?
I thought she was very well judged. That character could have been... so wacky.
And that's what I think it crossed over to wacky for me. Yeah. But Chris Hemsworth, fantastic.
Yeah, again, I like how they're playing with the whole, you know, flip gender thing.
Yes.
I mean, this is the guy who plays Thor. He was brilliant in this.
And stay for the closing credits.
Yes, stay for the credits. The credits are brilliant, yeah.
McCarthy and Wig did fine jobs too, I thought.
Brilliant.
Wig in particular.
Yeah.
It was a reprise of her bridesmaid's character in some way, you know, the kind of not so good with men type. But it was, again, it was a lovely performance by her because she has these facial expressions that I think are so unique to her.
And
I don't know that anyone can do what she does in the way that she does it. And it's a unique talent that, like I said, I just can't think of anyone else who does it in the way that she can.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anybody doubt, I mean, I've gone back and seen Bridesmaids at least three more times, and it's just watch her facial expressions in there. I mean, she is, and you're right, nobody else quite does it. She does it a particular way, and it took me a while to kind of get used to her, but now I would hate to imagine cinema without her.
I agree.
I mean, even in something like The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, you know, she had her facial expressions were just...
And then Diary of a Teenage Girl. I mean, we called Diary of a Teenage Girl last year where she plays something completely different. I mean, she has range.
I think of all the four leads, I think actually it was Leslie Jones who kind of got the bad deal. I mean, she really doesn't have much to do.
And but she's good.
She's good. She's good. But I wish I wanted her role to be beefed up a little bit more. She seemed a little bit lean in terms of, you know, depth of character. But
yeah, and a little bit racial stereotype. I mean, I hate to, you know, bring that up because we did just forget the fourth original Ghostbuster. So, I mean, we're probably as bad as anyone out there. But I mean, her character would just seem so stereotypical to me, and it's kind of a shame to me that that at this point in time we still have to have token black girl, you know. And it just for more than anything, I think if you're going to do that, then you know, allow the role to be something other than what we expect, you know.
Okay, so let's wrap this one. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So it's not the debacle that everybody would have you believe. It's by no means exceptional either. For me, it's very, very above average, maybe a little bit better than even above average. It's a good time at the movies. I wanted this one because it was Paul Feig, because it was McCarthy, because it was Kristen Wiig. I expected this to just be a classic. And I think it's a fun time of the movies. It's not a classic. 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Classic is the word that I was going to use in my sum up, because don't expect this to be a classic. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, this is an enjoyable piece of summertime blockbuster entertainment. There is not a moment in this movie that you'll feel bored, that you wish time was moving more quickly. The jokes work very well. They're incredibly funny. The cast, I thought, did a marvelous job of taking on what is an impossible task, which is taking a movie that's loved by so many and injecting their own sense of comedy into it. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. Wow. I did enjoy this very much more so than I thought I would do.
It's a good story. It's not as brilliant as the original. Well, that's because that was original. But it's really funny. Sometimes I think it's trying too hard to please us. But overall, I agree with you guys. It's a really fun time at the movies and a great set of performances. I agree with the Yazdi's 7 out of 10.
Moving on, The Secret Life of Pets.
Okay, so a terrier named Max's quiet life is upended when his owner takes in Duke, who's a stray, from whom Max is instantly repelled. So this is directed by Yarrow Chaney and Chris Renaud, and it's written by Cinco Paul, Ken Dorio, Brian Lynch, Simon Rich. And this is the original team from
Despicable Me.
Despicable Me, yep. And also
Minions,
thank you. And it stars Louis C.K., Eric Stonestreet, Kevin Hart, and a whole host of others who are giving their voices. So, Yazdi, what did you think of this one?
I think if you are an animal person, particularly if you're a dog person, you'll really like this movie, because it kind of, I think, really clinches how dogs behave. It's undeniably cute, and you know, I'm very reluctantly becoming a Kevin Hart fan, and Kevin Hart pretty much steals the whole movie right from underneath everybody else's noses. And this movie's already a big commercial hit, and I can see why. It's got a heart. It's cute. I don't know if I've seen anything like this, even though it's at any minute 100% familiar. It's a group of ragtag people who kind of band together, you know, against impossible odds. But it wears its heart on its sleeve, and it's very good-hearted. I had a fun time. I would recommend this to anyone.
Joe?
Didn't like it.
Did not like it?
It's interesting.
Joe, where's
I know,
your heart?
And I'm going to say it like that right off the bat, simply because I feel like this movie has an insecurity, and the insecurity is to not have a joke in any given scene. It's so full of, like, these... And don't get me wrong, this movie has some terrific moments in it. It takes on a great kind of adventure, which is it's supposed to do. But it reminded me of a movie, Shark Tale, that we saw a few years ago when DreamWorks was first getting into the CG. And they felt that the best way to have a movie, you know, be entertaining is to have a joke in every single line. Not every single scene, but every single line. This movie felt like it did that to me. I was also very disappointed that the first few minutes of the movie are this magical montage of what happens when people go to work. And that came straight from the trailer. I saw all of that, and that had some of the best moments in the movie, like, laid out. So from there, it kind of just went downhill for me. I found it hard to be interested and stay vested in these characters. And it's a real heartbreak to me, because I think the idea, the premise of the movie is wonderful. I just didn't find anything there other than gags. So I would recommend it for younger children, but you know, having come from, you know, having seen what Pixar can do and the pacing of those stories, I just felt real disappointment here. So I'm going to be very harsh on this one, because it's disappointing. The team from Despicable Me was so good, and here we've got Minions with animals.
So I'm in Joe's camp this week, Yazdi.
My God.
I think if you...
Heartless people. Heartless.
But look, I'll tell you this. Look, if you love or have pets, you will find a lot to like here. But Joe, I use the same words. This was a little disappointing for me overall because it's almost the exact story, if you remember, as Toy Story 3. But it lacks the emotionality and the emotional heft that those Toy Story and Pixar bring to us. So I'm with you, Joe. I was expecting so much from this movie. I love that montage at the beginning, but I hate when Duke arrives and then it just goes down the toilet for me.
But I think what they did was very smart, which is that they misled you into believing it's one kind of movie and it turned out to be another. I think everybody who saw the trailer very wisely concentrates and only shows you things from the first 5 minutes of the movie, and it leads you to believe the whole movie is going to be about what pets do when their owners leave the home. But that's kind of dispensed with in the first 5 minutes, and then it becomes this adventure movie and maybe more, you know, middle of the road, kind of a conventional story. And so I think people feel a little bit cheated.
And I think that's the thing for me, is that the premise is so clever, you know, that when we leave our houses, our pets have this, you know, social interaction that is their own, you know, that they don't spend their time pining for us, that they have, you know, I love that little idea that, you know, behind what you don't see is, it's like Toy Story,
right,
where, you know, the toys have absolutely their world when we're not looking. And it didn't do that. Yes, there's this kind of little universe, but then the whole story becomes this, you know, kind of crazy goose chase because of, you know, being caught by a pet sitter, a dog catcher, rather. I don't know. It ends up being more zany, and I think the kids will like it because there's lots of things moving around, bouncing around, chasing. There's excitement, there's fast talking, there's jokes, but it lacks something to draw me in emotionally. I didn't really care for the ultimate salvation of these pets from their situation, and that's sad because I'm an animal lover to the nth degree.
Exactly. And I did like, yes, you said it about dog people, but even the cat is so funny, and there are some really cute scenes where there's a tiny little box and a big fat cat will climb into the tiny little box, and you know, it's captured behavior of animals. Clearly it's written by people who are animal lovers,
not cat lovers.
It captures those things very well. But I don't know. I needed more story to
hang
on to.
I'm a cat person. Everyone knows this. So
yeah.
It's not very complimentary about cats.
Oh, I don't know. But it captures cat
maybe
essence.
That's my reaction.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I don't know. I you know, I've recently, I'm embarrassed to say this, I just got into Louis C.K. and he's a brilliant comedian. And one of the best things about Louis C.K. is this ability to be like darkly comedic. And I wish there was more of that dark comedy in this character, Max, but it was just zany. I think you described it perfectly. It was just zany. I did like the Kevin Hart character.
God.
He was hilarious. That should have been the movie, right?
But compare it to something like Bolt. Have you seen Bolt?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh my God, the emotional arc of that movie is superb.
Really?
Oh, I love Bolt. And it drew me in. I actually only caught the movie about a third of the way through, so I had to figure out what was going on. But what a wonderful animal story that one is.
I mean, did you see Shaun the Sheep last year?
Yes. It was so magical.
So it's exactly along those lines.
No.
It's about animals who are on an adventure. And in many ways, I don't think it's going to appeal to the, you know, the grim, sullen teenagers. But I think if you're younger than that, they're going to have a great time. And I had a great time. I mean, maybe I didn't have very high expectations. See, I did not. I know everybody was talking about this movie, and I saw the trailer and I was like, whatever. So I kind of really... And the Louis C.K., the Max character, I think is meant to be very earnest, and so he doesn't have much room to play it outside of being earnest. Mm. So in many ways, it's a very curious choice to have Louis C.K. play that.
You know?
Like a Matthew Broderick would have been good.
Yeah, yes. That's a good observation.
You know, but
anything else on this one?
No.
Okay, so Joe, you go first. We'll do a Yazdi negative sandwich. Let's give him an opportunity.
So, I mean, Yazdi, I agree with you completely. I think if you take your, you know, under 10-year-olds, they'll really have fun with this. There's lots going on. There's very colourful characters everywhere. There's, you know, there's smiles and jumps and chases you know, it's kind of, there's a it's a busy time at the movies, and it will keep their attention. For the rest of us, I just don't think it stands up to what we've come to expect in animation, and the bar is very high these days. You know, there's a lot of competition out there. Pixar, even DreamWorks, other films are doing this really well. How to Train Your Dragon, they take us on a journey that is much more interesting than this. So I'm going to have to give this a 5 out of 10. I'm very, very disappointed, and I actually found it hard to keep interested throughout. I mean, Walkout is too strong, but I really felt that this wasn't aimed at me and that I was wasting my time in the theater.
Yes, Steve.
I mean, I think it's, again, the curse of the expectations. I had very low expectations for it, and I was engaged throughout. I really enjoyed how demented, you know, you know, super psycho, insane the bunny Snuggle. Was. The bunny was just incredible.
The name is funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was one evil bunny.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved that part. And I guess it brought out my inner 10-year-old. So I mean, is it a classic animated movie? By no means. I think it's very, very dispensable. But for a summer animated movie, it's not half as bad. So I give it 7 out of 10. A little generous 7 out of 10. Maybe between 6 and 7, but I'll be generous and give it a 7.
I think it's cute and it's imaginative at times, but it doesn't pack a punch. It's kind of phoned in for me. And I think I agree with you, Joe. It's way better for kids than adults. 6 out of 10.
Okay.
And can we talk about the Minions short that came ahead of it? Like, we saw the Pixar short ahead of Finding Dory. What was the name of that one?
Something beginning with P.
Peeps, no?
It was about Piper. What a piece of magical animation. Yeah. It's done.
It was Piper.
In two minutes, we have this spectacular emotional journey that left us in a place where we were all just gasping at what we had viewed. Minions, on the other hand, was
mayhem.
Like, it was beyond mayhem. It was slapstick. It wasn't funny. It was horrible. I haven't seen the full-length Minions movie from last year. Despicable Me 2 is another one that I think I want to see, because the first one was superb.
Yeah.
But this whole idea of Minions, like you say, Yazdi, done.
You should just go away.
It looks like there's one on your microphone.
I know. My microphone looks like a Minion, yeah.
Instagram it, Rashmi.
No.
Speaking of which, Instagram.com / Movie Royal Us. We do have a couple pictures up there, so do follow us on Instagram. Let's wrap up the podcast. Facebook.com/MovieRollers, Twitter.com/MovieRollers, lots of ways to interact with us, and there's always mail@MovieRollers.com for your email. So do check us out. Do get in touch with us. We love to hear from you. Ghostbusters, Secret Life of Pets. Let's wind it up for today. Until the next podcast, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.